It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farish. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, our guest says the high price tag on college is putting the dream of a college education out of reach for many students and families. We'll find out what she says needs to change.
First, millions of people across the country tuned in to watch presidential hopefuls Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump meet head-to-head in the first debate before the general election.
You're telling the enemy everything you want to do.
No, we're not.
See, you're
no,
telling the not. Enemy everything we you want to do. No wonder you've been fighting.
We have to do a much better job at keeping our jobs.
Donald thinks that climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. I think it's real.
I do not say.
I will release my tax returns against my lawyer's wishes. When she releases her 33,000 emails that have been deleted.
He has really started his political activity based on this racist lie that our first black president was not an American citizen.
I think my strongest asset, maybe by far, is my temperament.
And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president, and I think that's a good thing.
Joining us now to talk about the debate is Susan Johnson. She's associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Whitewater and director of UW-Whitewater's Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Susan, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks, Rob. Glad to be here.
Well, with the basic civics assumption that a debate is supposed to inform voters about what a candidate would do if elected, how they would do it, was this debate, by that standard, successful?
I would have to say no. If we put it up against previous presidential debates that I've watched over the course of the time that I've watched debates, which is quite a while, and I recall those debates being much more substantive and both candidates in those instances articulating in a much more developed way policy proposals. We didn't necessarily see that last night.
Why? Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that for a couple of reasons. I think the primary reason would be that we haven't seen much of that from Donald Trump at all in terms of putting forward what we would traditionally consider policy position papers and things like that. There's some information that he's provided, but not to the extent that we have come to see other presidential candidates do in the past. So I think that that would be the main reason. And I think that while Hillary Clinton has done quite a bit more of that, when the debate took on such an uncivil, you use the word civic, such an uncivil tone so early on, I think that that dominated more so than substantive policy discussions.
So apart from policy, we get to see how a candidate behaves on a high-profile stage. Did we learn anything about the candidates and how they presented themselves, how they answered questions, how they dealt with attacks from the other candidate?
Well, I think that's a really important point. I think that many people would argue that the debates are less about policy and more about temperament, let's say. And some people tuning in who haven't necessarily been paying as much attention throughout the course of the campaign season, tuning in a meaningful way to see the two people who are vying for their vote to be president of the United States. And in that regard, I think last night we got a window into the temperament of both of the candidates. And I think if we're looking for differentiations, I would argue that Hillary Clinton was much more moderate in her temperament, let's say. And she was somewhat aggressive when Trump was aggressive. So there was a bit more back and forth than, again, I think what we expect. But I think that in terms of being quite aggressive, Donald Trump was quite aggressive in terms of interrupting Hillary Clinton while she was speaking and then interjecting with comments as she was speaking or going to the moderator in a way that I think isn't expected.
I wonder how much this matters. We hear sometimes in the past, debates, sometimes they're a turning point, sometimes they're a momentary blip. On the other hand, this one, we know at least 80 million people watch this thing, and that's preliminary numbers, a lot not counted in that. That doesn't account people who, like me, listened at WPR.org. I'll put in a plug. Susan, is this one going to be a difference maker?
You know, I think it's hard to tell right now whether or not it's going to be a difference maker. I think in the run-up to debates, there's a lot of attention paid to how this could be a game changer, and there are historical examples where we've seen debates have a significant impact. But I think that what we really need to do is step back. Some of the snap polls showed that Hillary Clinton was determined to be the winner by the people who were polled, and some of those polls varied quite a bit. But I think that we need to wait and see what some of the new polling looks like as it comes out in the week, you know, following this debate. Traditionally, the first debate is the most watched debate, so I would argue that it's probably the most important debate moving forward. I think we need to just look at, give it some time to sink in and see if it moves the polls.
We're talking to political scientist Susan Johnson from UW-Whitewater, looking at last night's debate. You can share your reactions on the Central Time Facebook page or give a call, 800-642-1234. Let's get into some of the issues that came up. They both presented their thoughts on jobs, the most important things to do about jobs and the economy in the country. We'll start with a listen to Hillary Clinton. She wanted to build an economy, she said, for people across the country, not just at the top.
We need new jobs, good jobs, with rising incomes. I want us to invest in you. I want us to invest in your future. That means jobs in infrastructure, in advanced manufacturing, in innovation and technology, clean renewable energy, and small business, because most of the new jobs will come from small business. We also have to make the economy fairer. That starts with raising the national minimum wage and also guarantee, finally, equal pay for women's work.
So do you see this as something that's appealing to the Democratic base, Bernie Sanders supporters, or is this a generally appealing message maybe to the undecided voters, whoever they may be?
I think you could pick that apart and see that there was something for everyone that she's hoping to attract. So you have things about bringing back manufacturing jobs, which would be important. She had a comment about technology infrastructure. She talked about equal pay for equal work. So I think that that was one of those catch-alls where she tried to hit on all the key constituencies for the Democratic Party, and then also thinking about a key swing group, for example, suburban, moderate suburban women who are going to be an important group in this election, who have sometimes voted for the Republican candidate. So I think she hit a lot of the key demographics.
Now here's Donald Trump talking about jobs and trade.
We have to stop our jobs from being stolen from us. We have to stop our companies from leaving the United States and with it firing all of their people. All you have to do is take a look at Carrier Air Conditioning in Indianapolis. They left, fired 1,400 people. They're going to Mexico. So many, hundreds and hundreds of companies are doing this. We cannot let it happen. Under my plan, I'll be reducing taxes tremendously from 35% to 15% for companies, small and big businesses.
So kind of combining two different platforms. He was talking elsewhere about trade and trade agreements, attacking Hillary Clinton on that. And then this corporate tax cut, that is more in the mainstream of Republican Party thinking than his anti-trade message. What did you think of what he had to say about jobs?
Yeah, that's really interesting because you're right. He's pitching two different messages simultaneously. He's pitching the strong anti-free trade agreement, which has a core of support in the Democratic Party and would also have a core of support in certain pockets of the Republican Party. But then at the same time, he's talking about those big tax cuts for what would be larger corporations. So he's really pitching at those two different groups. And I think when it comes to the issue, particularly of trade, I think that's one of the spots last night where I think he did well, because it's an issue when he spoke against TPP and went after Hillary Clinton for her support of that. And I think that that was one of the places where he scored points.
We're talking about last night's presidential debate. Susan Johnson is with us. She's associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Whitewater.
And we want to hear from you on this. What is your reaction to last night's debate? If you're on the fence, did either candidate make a strong case to win your vote? Or if you've already planned to vote for one of the candidates, did either of them sway you in their direction a little bit? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or leave a comment on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickard, and we're taking a look at last night's presidential debate between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump.
And we'd like to hear from you. What moments stood out to you last night in the debate? Did it help you maybe make a decision if you hadn't done so already? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Susan Johnson is with us. She's associate professor and chair of political science at UW-Whitewater and director of UW-Whitewater Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research.
And we'll go to our callers now. Eric is with us in Beloit. Eric, hi.
Good afternoon. The thing that I found particularly interesting was the comments leading up to the debate about fact-checking, because we know, politicians occasionally in the heat of the moment may pull some statistic or fact out of the air, and in this particular case, although they didn't do it on the main programming last night, they did do it on Bloomberg. And I was wondering if there was anything that your guest had heard about the effects of that and the discussion about how, the fact-checking of the particular statements had gone.
Eric, thanks for that call. Yeah, Bloomberg, NPR had record, I guess, page views for their live fact-checking. There's talk of, should Lester Holt be fact-checking? Should the candidates? Hillary Clinton kept mentioning fact-checking. Talk about the role of this whole wave of fact-checking going on, Susan.
Yeah, this is a newer phenomenon over just the course of the last few presidential election cycles where we have this idea of fact-checking. And you're right. I was just perusing the New York Times fact-checking before going on the air with you this afternoon, and I know that NPR was doing it, as you said, and others, and Hillary Clinton made a pitch for people to go to her website to see how they were going to be fact-checking Donald Trump's statements. You would think that given the heightening now of this role of fact-checkers, that candidates would know that that's happening and maybe tamp down some of the things that they say. And I don't know. I haven't seen any research that's shown that to be the case or not. I do know that speaking about last night, Donald Trump, several of the fact checkers pointed out that there were things that he said that were not true, which in fact had been shown that he said before. And the Iraq war debate came up again, a comment about global warming in China that then was traced back to a tweet that he had put out there a couple years ago. Hillary Clinton had she'd referenced TPP as being the gold standard of trade agreements, and that turned out to, in fact, be – Donald Trump brought that up, and that turned out to, in fact, be true. So I don't know to what extent fact-checking might make a difference in terms of what people say. I didn't see that it made a difference, at least in terms of what Donald Trump said. And you'd have to go back and kind of compare Hillary Clinton and fact-checking earlier to kind of, do an accurate analysis, I would say.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Pat on the line in Milwaukee. Pat, hi.
Hey. I think overall Hillary Clinton is probably is a little bit more composed, clearly knows more about the issues, which is important. However, I would say this. I think when Donald Trump said, same old politician, sounds good, won't work, hasn't happened, I think that's a pretty powerful line because it's true. In the past, every 4 years, we hear the same things. We talk about the same issue. It's the same talking points from Republicans and Democrats every 4 years, and nothing ever changes. And I think the mistake the media and some of the pundits are making is they're so concerned about Donald Trump's exact words and his rhetoric, and they're not taking him seriously, and they're not looking at the entire message where a lot of us are not as concerned about every single word he says, and we don't try and look at it from all different angles, but he sounds different. He's saying things differently, and we can kind of see the larger thing that he's trying to get at. And, yeah, it doesn't sound great. He's not a politician, but I think we're kind of sick of politicians, and that's why this race is so close.
Pat, thanks for that call. And Susan, I think he summed up really well probably the arguments on both sides of the race here. But Donald Trump's appeal, he sounds different. He's different, and people are fed up with the politicians they've seen before.
Oh, I agree with Pat. And I think that people who discount Trump because of how he speaks or what he says it's dangerous in the sense of if you're a Democrat and you're discounting that, or the pundits shouldn't be discounting that. I mean, he is the nominee of a major political party. I think part of the reason why some Republicans who are upset that he's the nominee are upset at themselves because they sort of let that happen and didn't recognize the fact that what he was saying was resonating with a lot of people for just the reasons that Pat raised. He isn't speaking like a politician, and there's this great distrust in much of America for politicians, and we have a Congress that's deadlocked, and so people are looking for someone who might come in and really, really shake things up, not just a little bit, but a lot, and for many people, he's the person to do it.
Pat, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Glenn in Blue Mounds. Glenn, hi.
Hi there. One of the comments I would have, first of all, I could only listen on the radio, so I was more nuanced to the vocal part. And when Donald interjected over Hillary's comments about him not paying any taxes for a decade or something, and he said, just because I'm a smart. Well, in other words, he said that anybody who pays their taxes is stupid.
Glenn, thanks for the call. Let's give a listen, actually, to that moment, that exchange here.
The only years that anybody's ever seen were a couple of years when he had to turn them over to state authorities when he was trying to get a casino license, and they showed he didn't pay any federal income tax. So
that makes
if
me
he's
smart.
Paid zero.
And Susan, I saw something about a focus group with undecided voters where they said there was an audible gasp in the room at that comment. Is that something that is going, if, to the extent people key in on particular things, is that something that you think could sway voters?
That's really interesting. The idea that he might not be paying taxes and he put out there that that would be, you know, a smart thing to do. You know, I don't know. I think that most people, even people who don't like the idea of paying taxes, understand that there's a need to pay taxes for things like police and schools and things like that. And so, you know, I would think that that would come be perceived more negatively than positively.
Thanks for the call. We're talking about last night's presidential debate with Susan Johnson, political scientist from UW-Whitewater. Back to our callers now. Lori is on the line in Rudolph. Lori, hi.
Hi. I would just like to say last night's debate was a little disappointing on both sides. Sure, Hillary Clinton came off very polished, and Donald Trump needs to go home and basically practice and learn a little bit more on facts. The thing is they diverted away from all of the questions about what their plans were. We never heard any concrete plan that they had. It was more of the childish high school picking on each other going on, and I don't think America can make a educated vote listening to either one of them last night on what we should bring this country to being.
Lori, thanks for the call. And yeah, a lot of people have remarked on the amount of time spent not answering the questions Lester Holt was asking, Susan.
Well, I think it was that. And I also think that sometimes some of the questions that were asked didn't get to the kinds of things that Lori wanted to hear. So beyond some of the childish bickering, I think some of the questions that came nearer the end weren't necessarily substantive policy issues. I think they're things that Lester Holt felt he had to address. Comments that Donald Trump had made, comments that Hillary Clinton had made, but those were clearly not substantive policy questions. In the next debate, it's a town hall forum, and from what I understand, people are able to submit questions ahead of time, voters are, and so maybe there'll be more substantive questions in that debate, but I think that Lori, you know, hit on something with the lack of specific policy discussions.
Thanks a lot for that call, Lori. Let's give another listen now. Both candidates were asked about race. They talked about race, crime, and policing, kind of lumped a lot of things in together. First, we'll listen to Hillary Clinton on this.
Unfortunately, race still determines too much, often determines where people live, determines what kind of education in their public schools they can get, and yes, it determines how they're treated in the criminal justice system. We've just seen those two tragic examples in both Tulsa and Charlotte. And we've got to do several things at the same time. We have to restore trust between communities and the police. We have to work to make sure that our police are using the best training, the best techniques, that they're well prepared to use force only when necessary. Everyone should be respected by the law, and everyone should respect the law.
Hillary Clinton on police community relations there. Let's go right to Donald Trump.
We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, it worked very well in New York, it brought the crime rate way down. But you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it. We have gangs roaming the street, and in many cases, they're illegally here, illegal immigrants, and they have guns, and they shoot people. And we have to be very strong, and we have to be very vigilant. We have to know what we're doing. Right now, our police, in many cases, are afraid to do anything. We have to protect our inner cities because African-American communities are being decimated.
So, Susan, we heard law and order there, change in the way we police from Hillary Clinton. Hot issues now. What did you make of the back and forth there?
Well, I think it was an interesting response from Hillary Clinton in regard to, I wouldn't say interesting, I would say it was a very measured response to a very tough issue. As far as Donald Trump, he's been talking about stop and frisk quite a bit recently. It's come up and it's been one of the things that he's been advocating for. And talking about law and order, and that was a big theme of his convention, so he's sticking with that theme. But I think that there's broader issues that we need to hear the candidates address when it comes to matters of race, and it's more, obviously, as we know, than just these issues related to crime, as Donald Trump was referencing it.
We'll leave it there for now, Susan. Thank you so much. We'll call you back again to look more at this presidential race as it continues.
Sounds great. Thanks, Rob.
Been talking to Susan Johnson, Associate Professor and Chair of Political Science at UW-Whitewater, Director of the UW-Whitewater Center for Political Science and Public Policy Research. Been talking about last night's debate, and by the way, tune in tomorrow at this time. Harry Enten from 538.com is going to be back with us, try to figure out how we'll know how this debate has affected the presidential race.
Coming up after the news, our guest says the dream of a college education is slipping out of reach for an increasing number of students and their families. We'll find out why. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farad. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.